change around my team. Yeah, we off the leash. You could look us in the eyes, see we have peace. Black and gold, that's the colors when we go to war. When we step up on that field, you gon' hear my roar. We them Tiger Cats, we them Tiger Cats. We them Tiger Cats, we them Tiger Cats.
Yeah, nobody hitting harder. Better keep your guard up, cause with everything we draw, we can score it when we wanna.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, it's been a long time since you and I sat down to do one of these. There's been a lot of stuff to talk about, but I think the most important thing that we have to get off of our chest first is we are on the precipice of a new Pigskin Pete. The team announced a few weeks ago that there are two candidates, Kyle Scott and Jeff Connor. Two guys are up for Pigskin Pete. We want to throw our support behind one of them, but there's a problem, Mike. Neither of these diehard Ticat fans follow Podski Wee Wee on Twitter. Now, can they really? We're a Hamilton institution, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Pigskin Pete is a Hamilton institution. These two things have got to come together. So if one of these guys wants our support, I am willing to say on the show right now, and I hope I have your backing here, the first one of these two gentlemen to hit the follow button and to follow Podski Wee Wee on Twitter, they become the officially endorsed candidate by us for the new Pigs Compete. What do you say?
I think that's a great idea. And do you know for a fact they are on Twitter?
I do, because when the Ticats put out the release on Twitter about these are the two guys that will be up for it, they put their Twitter handles in their bios. So, Kyle, Jeff, here's your opportunity. I don't know if you listen to the show. I hope you do. If you're diehard Ticat fans, what are you doing? You want to be Pigs Compete, you got to be listening to Podski Wee Wee. Hit that follow button, the first one of you to do it, and I will. You can see the timestamps on it. First one of you to hit the follow button, you will become our official candidate. As soon as it happens, we will come back on the show, and we will say that you're our official nominee for Pigs Compete. And if neither of you do it, and maybe they're not going to hear this because they don't listen to us, we're just going to keep dragging them on the show until they do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if neither of them do it, I don't think either of them are going to become what?
No, we can't endorse either of them. Neither of them are good enough.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, if you're a true Ticat fan, you follow the Podski Wee Wee account, and that's just the bottom line. Because we all know there's only 300 and some true Tiger Cat fans.
Indeed. Okay, let's move on to some actual news, some actual stuff that we got to talk about. And first and foremost, the big thing, the thing that probably got us our most interactions on Twitter for anything, is something we had nothing to do with. Mike, your favorite player of all time, I think would be fair to say, a guy whose jersey you still have, Rob Hitchcock, is going on the Wall of Honor. I'm there's no words, man. Just absolutely, of course, deserving of this honor.
Absolutely. The guy had a tremendous career in Hamilton and then went on to Edmonton for a year or two, maybe just a year if I remember correctly.
But I did the research. He only played three games for the Eskimos.
Only three games, eh?
Yep.
Huh. Well, that it doesn't matter. That's not even part of his career, technically. You know, it's just all about his Ticat stuff, and it's going to be great to see his name up on that wall, even though, you know, hopefully I'll be able to get to the stadium and actually see it. But for you and all the other fans that get to go to games, you know, for me growing up watching him play, it's just really cool to for the Ticats to honor him like that, because he deserves it. He's one of the best players I've ever seen play in a Ticat uniform.
And this is step one, man. We've been pushing the hashtag Hitch for Hall. We have the T-shirts. I just got one. It's as crazy as it sounds. I ordered one and got it in the mail the day it was announced that he'd be going on the Wall of Honor. It's almost like it was meant to be. So this is great for Rob Hitchcock, who is the team's all-time leader in tackles. He is second all-time in interceptions. He is one, I believe, if I remember correctly, one of four or five players to ever play 200 or more games in a Ticats uniform. He was one of the fiercest hitters that you ever saw. He he was with the team, I think, 12 years. He was drafted in 95, and I think 07 was his final year with the club. Obviously, as we all remember, a member of the 1999 Grey Cup Championship team. Just the accolades are there. The numbers are there. The wall is definitely a deserving place for him. But this is destination number one as far as I'm concerned. Number two, the final stop, has got to be getting his bust in the Hall of Fame. And until that happens, Mike, I think you're with me. We're going to keep pushing hashtag Hitch for Hall.
Absolutely. And now we just have to figure out the next player to get into the Hall of Fame. Oh, we'll work on it. We'll work on it.
Yeah, we will. We will.
What about DeAndre Cobb? Remember him?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, I do. I remember all those corn cob heads. Definitely Hall worthy. Come on, let's not dilute the Hall, buddy. Come on.
Yeah. But obviously, Hitchcock, you know, great player. I remember one game, I think it was against the Alouettes, and he laid a hit, and I was live at the stadium, and it literally made me jump out of my seat. It was one of those shoulder to chest, and the Montreal player just went right to the ground on his back. It was so beautiful, and he laid so many of those hits throughout his career. It was a pleasure to watch him play.
Yeah, you didn't go across the middle against the Ticats during that era because Hitchcock would take your head off. And I know it's a different game now, and probably a lot of the hits that he laid would have been probably deemed dirty or illegal in today's game. But at the time, that's the way football was played, and I don't think anyone played it at a higher level at that time than Rob Hitchcock. So this is absolutely deserved, and I hope I believe, if I'm not mistaken, sometime soon we're going to hear about the Hall of Fame induction class of 2019. How great would it be if he gets both of them in the same year?
That would be outstanding, and isn't it funny how we're starting to get older and now we're seeing players that actually played in the league go into the Hall? It's kind of a scary thought.
Yeah, it is. It just means we're no longer young men anymore.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
There are some young men still playing the game of football, however, and a couple of them have decided to remain Hamilton Tiger Cats. Now, the first one we're going to talk about, we spent a lot of the last season kind of dragging him for some of his mistakes, but it's a new year, and I like to give people a fresh slate. So we stopped using his name last year, but in the interest of starting fresh, Liram Hirilahu's name is going to be allowed to be said on the podcast until, of course, he shanks a kickoff or punt out of bounds, and then we will go back to doing what we did last year. But as of right now, he is perfect on punts and kickoffs, so he gets his name back, and he is now back with the Ticats for 2 years. This is probably one of the more controversial re-signings simply because of what we saw last year. I'll give you some of his numbers, which were pretty good. 46 of 54 on field goals. That's an 85.2% success rate. Third in total field goals made, second in attempts. He made the most field goals from 50-plus yards at 7. Oddly enough, though, he was 7th in field goal percentage. But if you go look at some of those, Brett Lawther was in the 90s. Lewis Ward was in the 90s. 85% is still pretty darn good. And a lot of those guys are like, there's some 86s. Like, it's minimal between, like, 7th and, like, 3rd. It's like right. 1 or 2 percentage points. So it's not like he's 7th by, like, a wide margin. But field goals, he was tremendous last year. I think we can agree on. It was the other stuff that we mentioned. It was the kickoffs. It was the punts where he was less than stellar. Now, obviously, being Canadian, that does 3 jobs. The only Canadian in the league that does 3 jobs. It gives the Ticats some roster flexibility, especially some ratio flexibility. So I can see why you'd kind of want to bring him back. And we've seen him have down years. I remember it was a couple years ago. I think it was his last year in Winnipeg. It didn't look like he could hit a kick to save his life. Then he goes to Toronto and he essentially boots the game-winning field goal in the Grey Cup. Then he comes to Hamilton, had a bit of an up-and-down year. So I guess for the most part like the signing. But, man, I really hope the kickoffs and the punts, especially the kickoffs. The kickoffs out of bounds to me are just – that's inexcusable. And what was it,
yes,
like 7, 8 weeks in a row he did one? I don't know if that's scheme. I don't know if that's his mechanics or whatever. I really hope that changes, because if that changes, last year I thought he had a really good season. So here's hoping he can get those figured out over the next 2 years and we can go back to not worrying about the kicker anymore.
Yeah, I think I said this before, but when the field is 65 yards wide, I mean, you got to be able to keep the ball in bounds. And obviously that is something he can work on. You know, I wasn't overly happy with this signing, but if you look at the numbers, like you just mentioned, the field goal percentages were pretty good. We get a little nervous when he's inside the 50-yard line, which is very strange, but he's money from outside the 50. So he's a bit of a, you know, hot and cold type of kicker. Hopefully this year he's hot rather than cold, and we can, you know, put those illegal punts and illegal kickoffs in the past, and he can have a really good year, because I do believe he is a good kicker if everything's going his way.
Yeah, and maybe – I don't know if this was just a thing with Hamilton, because I might not just paid as much attention to him when he was in Winnipeg and when he was in Toronto, but I don't recall this being something that was an issue for him in the past. So it just felt like
– no.
I don't know if it was maybe the wins at Tim Hortons Field, which we know can be tricky, but he also did it on the road, so it can't just be that.
Kickers, when they were in Tim Hortons Field, like the opposing teams. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm hoping that it's just maybe – like we have a new special teams coordinator with Jeff Reinbold, who we know is a master of special teams. So maybe he can fix what ails the team there, especially what ailed Hirolahu there. So hopefully we won't have the – maybe it was just like – I don't know. It seemed like he was always kicking to the sidelines. Maybe that's part of the problem. Maybe if they just had him boot it down the center of the field, it'd be easier. I don't know. I'm not a coach. I don't claim to be a coach. It was just very frustrating last year going, well, we know he's going to boot one out of bounds and it's going to cost us field position and yada, yada, yada. And then lo and behold, he goes and does it. It's one of those, it's really kind of the only flaw in his game, because the field goal kicker, he's really good, especially for a Canadian kicker. Like, look, I know Brett Lawther had a crazy year last year. I know Lewis Ward had an all-time season last year. But there's a good chance
they're all kicking from like the 20-yard line every time. Like,
yeah, and but there's
you know
also
what I mean, it's because their offense Ward. Sucks.
Yeah, but there's also a good chance that those guys come back down to earth, right? Like,
sure.
Justin Medlock is maybe the greatest kicker of all time, and he doesn't post multiple 90-plus percentage seasons back to back to back. So there's a good chance, like the kid in Ottawa missed one field goal all last year. Until the playoffs, when I think he missed a couple, there's a good chance that he, you know, yeah, okay, he was great. Maybe that doesn't happen this year. You know, different circumstances, right? Hirolahu, aside from that one really awful year he had in Winnipeg, has been pretty darn consistent with his field goals. And you mentioned it, the kicks from 50. You put that guy 50 plus, and he's nailing. He had 7 kicks made from 50 yards last year, the most in the league. That's incredible. Like that's not stalling in the red zone. That's not asking him to kick 18, 25-yard field goals because the offense can't score points. That's let's get points because, you know, yeah, the offense still stalled, but hey, let's get something out of this. He's good at that. That's worth the money to me as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, maybe they got a cheaper deal on him because I know he signed a pretty big contract his first go-around with the Ticats. Maybe they got him for a little cheaper, save some money. And I was thinking about, you know, he got that tryout in the NFL, and that must have been because of his 50-plus percentage, right? I mean, it couldn't have been because of anything else.
It's not the kickoffs, for sure.
yes.
No, definitely.
Moving on.
Let's talk about the other guy that has decided to stay around in Hamilton. That's Dane Evans, and this is an interesting one. He's had a 3-year extension through 2021. This is a guy who has very limited playing time. He played one game last year. It was the season finale against the Montreal Alouettes. I would like to, if you would so let me, to read what I wrote about it on 3Down, because there's been some poo-pooing about re-signing Evans. So I basically wrote that I thought he had a rough start to the game, but he settled in nicely. Made some rookie mistakes that you kind of expect because he was essentially a rookie, but he finished the game 22 of 37 for 315 yards with 2 TDs and 2 picks. And I guess, I don't really remember the game, he drove the team down the field and Hirolahu missed the game-winning field goal. So it always comes back to Hirolahu. So it's clear to me that Evans is a guy that the team wants to develop. And when's the last time the Ticats developed any type of quarterback internally? I know people will say Mazzoli, but he spent a year in Edmonton. So that even he's not a guy that the Ticats brought into the league. It's been a long time since the Ticats have developed a guy internally. And from, again, something that happened 6 months ago, clearly I was impressed with how he played. Now, whether that means anything or not to you or to anyone, that's up to them. But I do recall him playing decently well as the game progressed. And I know that there's some comments out there about Hamilton needing a veteran quarterback. Some say for the starting job, which we're not getting into that because that's ridiculous. But I know a lot of people clamor for a veteran backup. But you look around the league and you got to develop guys, right? Like Bo Levi Mitchell, Mike Riley, some of the guys that were the stars of this league now were at one time second and third string quarterbacks. You can't just go out and get a retread. You got to develop a guy. And the Ticats are pretty committed to developing Dane Evans, and he's committed to staying here. I like the signing.
Yeah, I like the signing too. I remember liking – I like his arm strength. I remember that when I saw him play. He can really, you know, throw that ball well. He played 4 years in Tulsa in college, and his numbers are pretty good. You know, they progressively get better throughout the four-year career. His best year was 2015, where he threw for over 4,000 yards, 25 touchdowns, and 8 interceptions. The guy, I think, can play. He was when he was coming out of college in the 2017 NFL draft, he was rated the 25th best quarterback in the draft, which, you know, that's kind of down the totem pole a little bit. But I think this guy has the tools to be a successful quarterback in the CFL. He just needs to bide his time, sit behind Mazzoli, learn some things, learn the game. And you never know. Like, in the future, he could be our guy.
Like, honestly, though, Mike, like, when you think about it, when's the last time this team developed a quarterback? Like, brought a guy into the league from ground zero, built him up?
They've tried. I remember they tried with Quinton Porter.
Yeah.
That didn't work out so well. But successfully, I can't remember. Every time we've had success, it seems like we're bringing in a quarterback from somewhere else, right? You had Danny Mack, Henry Burris.
Claros.
Zach Claros. You know, we brought in Casey Printers.
Kevin Glenn.
Success, yes. Over and over. It seems like it's like that for all the Eastern teams, basically.
No one seems to be able to develop a guy.
Right? They just seem to take from the West, you know, the established quarterbacks and bring them in to the team. So, we've seen so many quarterbacks through the years where we thought that there might be potential. Quinton Porter is one of them. I was a big Quinton Porter fan at the beginning of his career. I thought that this guy was going to be the next franchise quarterback for the Tiger Cats. That didn't work out, but hopefully Dane Evans is a little different story. I feel confident with him as a backup.
Dude, I thought – now, this isn't Ticats related, but I thought Stephen Giles was going to be the next great CFL quarterback. So
I thought – let's not talk about – I thought the exact same thing. So
one-eyed wombat. That brought us together. The old one-eyed wombat comment, I believe, is one of our first interactions ever between each other. So without Stephen Giles, there is no Potski Wee with Mike and Josh. So – that would be a better thing because they hate us both. Yeah. But hey, without Stephen Giles and his terrible, horrible, no good, very bad throws, we wouldn't be sitting here talking ball right now.
He was so bad. I mean, he couldn't hit anything. But anyways, I digress.
So you posted a poll on our Twitter account asking about fans and what their biggest concerns were. I thought I'd bring it up now because this is kind of where sort of the concerns about quarterbacking came in. It was a really tight vote. Offensive line and linebackers both came in tied at 34%, kicker at 22%, and 10% was for other. And yeah, someone was like experienced veteran quarterback. And yeah, I don't know. I don't really get it. And then the same guy who always says, the team should assign Jovan Olufoye or they should bring in all these. Like, I just kind of want to set the record straight here with stuff like this. Teams can't sign everybody. Okay, and I know you know this, Mike. I'm not speaking to you. I'm just speaking to people who listen to us who think that, oh, man, they should go out and they should nab this veteran or that veteran or who, what have you. They can't sign everybody. You can't have a team filled with guys making $150,000 plus because then you're going to go over the salary cap. And you have to have Canadians. And we get the same constant messages. And I know that you are maybe not fed up with it, but it irks you a little bit. Same stuff over and over again from the same people. Guys, we love the interactions in that, but like, think about it for a second. You need Canadians to win in this league, and you need to have guys on rookie contracts. So like, the constant, we need to sign this vet, we need to sign that vet. You can't sign them all. The team is developing players at the tackle position, I think. Riker Matthews, who was our boy, who's now in the NFL, we did not know who he was 2 years ago when he first came into the league. Delvin Bro is a guy we did not talk about when he came into the league. Like, there's a number of guys that this team is trying to develop, and you have to, like, you're going to deal with growing pains. Yes, Dane Evans is a backup quarterback, but was people, maybe I'm wrong, maybe people do get this way, but are people freaking out in Edmonton when James Franklin was the backup quarterback. That's not an experienced veteran backup. Were people freaking out when Mike Riley was backing up Travis Lule? Do people freak out when, like, the only way you can create new stars and let new guys is to let them play and let them develop. You can't always just sign veterans. And I just get sick and tired of seeing people go, well, they should sign this guy. Okay, well, what are you going to – who are you going to release to sign him? Or you release – okay, that's a Canadian starter. Or that's a Canadian, but you can't release Canadians.
Well, we'll just tell someone to take a 100K pay cut, and they won't mind.
Because, you know, at your work, your boss comes to you and says, we want to bring in this really good guy from another store. Hey, we're going to ask you to take a $5 an hour pay cut. You're going to go, yeah, sure, no problem. No, of course not. Like, it's.
I'm a team player, Josh.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, it's exactly. So, like, can we ease up everybody on the sign this vet, sign that vet? You can't sign all vets, and you got to let the team experience some growing pains. And every now and then, you're going to find a diamond in the rough. Dane Evans might never be more than a backup in the CFL, but I applaud the Ticats for trying to develop someone as opposed to taking an easy route and going and signing, as much as I would love it, going and signing a guy like Kevin Glenn.
And, you know, they get Dane Evans for 3 years, and they must be on a decent deal, you know, so they're probably saving money. If you go out and sign Kevin Glenn or, you know, whoever, you know, you bring Drew Tate out of wherever he is, or you're probably going to sign him for a little bit more. So, and it's not to say that I don't have concerns. Like we were talking about the offensive line, I have a little bit of concern about the tackles. You know, I'm a little bit worried. I'm not going to say I'm not. But I think they have a good idea how good these kids are. And, hope you know, you just got to believe that they're going to be the next Riker Matthews or the next whoever. They're going to be the guys that bring this offensive line together. I'm hoping that is the case.
Yeah, I'm with you too, man. Whenever there's unknowns, you're always a little leery, right? Like you're always like I said, it's an unknown, so you don't know how well a guy's going to play. But the guys they brought back, Avery Jordan played decently. He wasn't, you know, out of this world, not an all-star level tackle, but he played decent enough. Kelvin Palmer, I thought, played really well when he got into the lineup after Tony Washington was traded, and I think Jordan missed a game due to injury, and they put him, I thought he did a really good job. A second year in the same style of offense. These guys are going to get better, and if they don't, then you find someone else. But the team, you have to balance veterans with rookies and younger guys. That's just in the salary cap world, that's just how it works. So it would be great to be able to field an all-star team of nothing but guys who have played 5 to 10 years in the CFL, but that's just not financially feasible.
Yeah, I mean, every team, like you said, in a salary cap world, especially in a salary cap world like the CFL, every team is going to have holes, you know, here and there. So I guess we're going with, you know, we're taking a chance on the offensive line, which I'm not a huge fan of. I think it's, you know, you want to have the best players, you know, protecting a quarterback. But like we mentioned several times before, you can't sign everyone. So we're just going to have to roll with it. And I believe in the guys that are running this team with, you know, the GMs, that the collaborative, you know, collective we have running this team. I think they know what they're doing. So I'm pretty confident that we'll be all right on the O-line.
So teams can't sign everyone, but here are 9 other players the Ticats signed over the last couple of weeks. Now, the vast majority of these guys are CFL rookies, so they come in at a cheaper price. But the kind of the big name amongst them is linebacker Terrence Plummer, who spent a couple of years with the Argos, won a Grey Cup with them in 2017, playing in 17 games. Only played in 3 last year, but he has experience starting at both the Mike, middle linebacker spot, and the Will linebacker spot where Simone Lawrence plays. So he's got that versatility that we like. He has 36 defensive tackles and 7 special teams tackles over 20 games with the Argos. So again, not a huge sample size, but a guy that has starting experience, and with there being some question marks in the linebacking core, adding a guy like Plummer, they added Justin Tuggle earlier this offseason. You can kind of see that they're developing some sort of plan. And with the 7 special teams tackles, Plummer has looks like he can do some work on special teams as well. So that's nice. Again, it looks like we're not going to get that sturdy vet like a Larry Dean who went off to Edmonton. But they're looking in this area to find some veterans, or younger veterans as the case may be. Plummer, like I said, played 2 years in the league to maybe fill that hole. So I kind of like this signing. The other ones, Mike, you can touch on the Plummer one in a second. But I just like to get the other names out there. They signed 3 DBs, Gerard Harper, Darius Allensworth and Trey Dempsey. They signed four wide receivers: Kiaris Garrett, Frank Stevens, Ray Bolden, and Desmond White. And they brought back running back Rajon Neal, who I think we talked about a couple of years ago. He was with the Ticats in training camp in 2017. So a guy that has some familiarity with the team. Maybe they want to see what he can do as well. But what do you think about the Plummer signing most of all?
Well, you know, he has a little bit of experience. He, I think he's a very athletic guy. I have high hopes for him. I don't know, really know what to expect. You know, they bring in these guys. I remember a couple of years ago they brought in a linebacker and we penciled him in basically to be a starter, and then he got cut in training camp. So you never really know with these guys, but I think it's a good signing. I watched a couple, you know, highlight reels on YouTube. I like what I saw. So hopefully this guy can fill in the spots where, you know, we lost Dean, we lost Unamba. Hopefully he can be a nice, you know, slide him in and we won't lose any traction on that in the linebacker core, because, you know, the offensive line and the linebackers, that's the biggest concern for pretty much all Ticat fans as far as I know. And we're going with some young guys, but I think we'll be all right.
I think so too. I think linebacker is one of the, it's not excluding the Sam position, I think linebacker is one of the easiest positions in which to find someone to play. It's almost like the defensive version of the running back. You can find running backs. This is not to in any way to insult running backs. They're a dime a dozen. You can find it. We didn't know who Alex Green was 2 years ago, and now he's the starter who everyone was like, we can't wait to get him back. You know what I mean? So I think it's the same. Larry Dean was an unknown before he came. No Ticats fans knew who Larry Dean was, and then when he left, he was an all-star. So finding a guy to man the middle, I think, is easy-ish. I think finding guys at all is difficult, but I think if you're looking at the team, some of the easier positions, I think, to find guys is in the linebacking core and at running back. The interesting thing about all this, though, is we're talking about these in April. If you go to the CFL transactions page, and I don't know how often you go there, but I frequent it. I knew about all these moves like two podcasts ago, and it was one of these things where I just don't understand why the league is so secretive about this stuff. Why did it take so long for the team to announce it if the league has it out in the open there on a page on their website that said, like, Terrence Plummer signed, whatever. Why it took so long for the Ticats to announce this, it just seems like one of those anachronisms from the old days where it just – none of this makes sense to me, how the CFL kind of deals with contract stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a very secretive world, the CFL, and they need to be more transparent, I'd say, for many reasons. One, for the fans. You know, in other areas you have, you know, fantasy football, and we've talked about this before. You need to get the depth charts out there earlier so fans can plan around, you know, they can know who's on the field when and when they play on Saturday or when they play on Friday, in days in advance. They need to be more transparent with a lot of things in the CFL. And, you know, like you mentioned, this is one of those things. Why can't there be a press release, you know, the day a player signs? Why can't the Ticats put out something a day after they sign a player? You know, why does it take 3 or 4 weeks to get out to the public? It just doesn't make any sense.
So the other thing that you can find on this transaction page, and I don't know if this is just some weird thing in the CFL, but when a guy signs a contract extension, they have to cut him for essentially. So it's like if you go to the transaction page, they'll say like the player's name, they'll say like delete from active. And then if they re-sign a new deal, it'll say like right above it, it'll say the same player's name and then add to. So like with Dane Evans, for instance, you go on the CFL transaction page, you can go by team so you don't even have to scroll through all of them. Click Hamilton Ticats, you'll see it says, it'll say like Dane Evans deleted from active, Dane Evans added. There's a couple players in the Ticats that says that for. One of them is Nick Shortle, and the other one is Tunde Adeleke. Both of them have been deleted and added, re-added back to the roster. In my years of following the CFL, what I have learned that means is that they have signed new contracts. So Adeleke was a free agent pickup in February, like a pretty big one. We talked about him at length on this show about how
very versatile player. Yep.
They never announced the length of his deal. He's already signed a new contract. So did he take less money? Did he take more money? Did he add years? Did he delete years? what the hell is that about? Shortle was a free agent acquisition, or not a free agent acquisition. He was a re-signing last year going into the 2018 season. I think he signed a two-year contract extension. Has he signed a longer extension? So he signed a two-year deal, which means last year would have been year one. This year would have been year two. Has he signed an extension with the team? Did he take more money? Again, this just comes down to it's buried on this website page, and the team has not talked about it at all, and the league has not talked. Why are we sitting here not knowing what play? It just seems so ridiculous.
Yeah, we should at least know the length of the contract. Now, the money behind the contract might be a PA thing. Maybe the CFLPA, the players don't want their information out there, how much money they make. So I'm not sure if you can blame the CFL on that one. But yeah, the extent, how long the contract is, should be an easy thing to put out there, and it just helps fans know information. We need to know more things about the players and the teams. So for them to bury it on the transaction page is ridiculous.
All right, Mike, it's time to talk stuff that no one wants to talk about. We got to talk about CBA. And this last few weeks have just been something. This is probably the most contentious I've ever seen this. I know around collective bargaining, things can get a little rough, but this feels different to me. I don't know why, but it just does. Let's start at the beginning, and that was they had done all these meetings in March and April, and everything was going well, and then the league put out a release that said they are delaying meetings for a couple of weeks. They were doing one a week in a different CFL city, but then the league said, no, we have other things we have to focus on. We're delaying CBA negotiations for the next couple of weeks. They won't get back to the table until April 29th. And I don't know about you, but this kind of pissed me off, because shouldn't job number one be getting a new CBA done so we have a season in June? Shouldn't that be the number one priority? Not gallivanting off to France or Italy or having these European drafts or all this other nonsense about CFL 2.0. Shouldn't it be about making sure that the actual players have a CBA so we can actually play football? Now, I don't know. I don't think, at least I hope, there's not going to be a work stoppage. I think cooler heads will prevail and everything will get done. But, man, this is a bad look by the league, because I don't know if you recall, but way back in the earlier winter, a lot of fans were clamoring, why are they not negotiating? Why are they not negotiating? And one of the things that was brought up was, why are they in Mexico doing this? And why are they over here doing that? And there were a lot of fans who would strike back saying, well, come on, they could do more than one thing at once. We just made them look like a bunch of idiots, because apparently they can't. This is – now, obviously, this is a tactic by the league to force a deal. The longer you wait to negotiate, the sooner you have until camp starts, yada, yada, yada. But there were a lot of people out there defending the league, saying they could do this and that and then still negotiate the CBA. And the league said, yeah, no, we can't do that. So now all those people who defended them kind of look like morons, no?
Well, they can do multiple things at once, and they could do multiple things at once if they wanted with this CBA negotiations. They could be at the table right now, and they could be, looking for players in Zimbabwe or Nigeria or whatever. But they just choose not to, because they think it's in their best interest to do this, I guess. I've never been a part of a labor negotiation. I do have a job, but I've never been at the table or whatever. So I don't know what exactly goes down and how, things go. But to me, the best thing would be to be at the table every week trying to hammer out a deal, not delaying talks by a month. I don't know, everything was going, everything was flowers and sunshine until they started talking about money. And of course, as soon as they started talking about money, things hit a brick wall. And it's just unfortunate. I want what's best for the league. I want the players to get a fair deal. And it just seems like every time we come to the CBA negotiations, the players are getting screwed, and it's very unfortunate, and it's discouraging, because I love the league, obviously, as a whole, but I do want to see the players. The top end players are obviously getting paid well, the Mike Riley's of the world, $800,000 a year, that's a damn good living, I might say myself. But the lower end guys is what I'm worried about, the $50,000 a year guys that come into the league looking for an opportunity but can't afford to feed their families when they go back to the States. That's a big problem for the CFL. So they should just be at the table, right? They should be talking every single chance they get, unless there's the CFL has plopped a number on the table and said, we're not going up from this no matter what.
Where do you stand then? So let's move on to the player side of things on the players sort of, at least on online, kind of banding together and saying, no new CBA, we're not showing up for training camp.
That's all well and good, Josh, but I remember them doing this last time, the big name players, the guys that actually make money. That's the problem, right? Like, these guys can afford to strike. The younger guys can't, and that's where the CFLPA, you know, gets into trouble, because they're the younger players that don't make any money are on a different page than the veterans who make, you know, the quarterbacks and the Canadians who make 200,000 plus a year. They're all right, but the guys that are coming into the league, they just want to play. Okay, they signed their contract, they want to get on the field, they want to show what they have, and I think that's the problem they're going to run into this time again.
But even if the younger players show up, if none of the star players show up, is anyone going to care? Like, are you going to want to watch a Lions Stamps game that has you don't even know who playing quarterback? Like, if some of the big name guys, if the young guys show up, but all of the high-priced vets and all the star, the guys that are marketed by this league don't show up, the league's going to have a big problem.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, like, what happened last time?
What happened last time was they all reported to camp.
Everybody showed up, yeah.
Everyone showed up, and they thought, okay, if we're here, we're all here, we'll still get our work in, but we'll work towards a deal. I don't know. This feels different to me. Like, I don't think there'll be a strike, even though another piece of information from this is they're doing a strike vote on Wednesday. Now, this is not to immediately strike, but this is to get their ducks in a row, because there are different provincial laws across the country where you have to have different timelines for different things. And this is kind of what screws up everything when it comes to this stuff. But they're taking a strike vote on Wednesday from the entire membership to see if, hey, yeah, it's cool that you guys call for a strike if need be. So, like, this feels different than in years past.
Yeah, it does. It feels like they're more serious this time around, that's for sure. I wish I knew more about the league's finances, you know, and that's something that the players probably wish they knew too, because, you know, the publicly owned teams release their numbers, but the privately owned teams do not. And it'd be interesting to see how much Toronto's losing, how much Montreal is losing, how much BC is losing, to really gauge what the league can afford. And obviously, they don't want to turn over those numbers. So it's just, we might be in trouble. Like, we might not see the start of the season, or maybe we just missed the preseason. But the bottom line is, a work stoppage isn't good for anyone. Not the league, not the players in the long run. They need to get to the table and start working on things, hammering out some numbers, and give the players a goddamn decent deal. Like, let's raise this minimum salary. Let's raise the salary cap. We have to start moving forward. Yes, the AAF. Oh, Christ. Yes, the AAF is no longer around, but then the XFL comes in next year. So they just have to get on. Oh, they have to, you know, step up the game here.
So back in January, Dave Naylor reported that the league revenue was $210 million. And then my boss at Three Down Nation and our friend Drew Edwards wrote a piece about it, saying that essentially that players get 22% of total league revenue. Now, obviously, that's – there are differing – you know, like you said, there's no pool of money that, like, every team puts into. But, like, Saskatchewan makes more. Toronto and Montreal and BC, places like that, kind of maybe lose money. We know for sure that Toronto does. But on a whole, $210 million in league revenue – and the players get 22% of that. If you look around at different sports leagues, it's closer to 50 and sometimes over 50% of league revenue that players get. So it seems as if maybe the league is crying a little poor, or the teams are crying a little poor when they're not doing as badly as they make it out to be. And like, that's this whole thing with the Alouette sale, right? Like this, the one thing that apparently the league didn't want to get out was that there was interest in buying the Alouettes, because if there's interest in buying the Alouettes, that means that people think that this is a property that can make money, because you don't invest in something that you think is going to lose money no matter how much passion you have for it. You look at it for some reason for there to be a way to reap a return on your investment. So if there's multiple interested parties in buying the Alouettes, that means there's still some value in that franchise in a large market in this country. The league didn't want that getting out. The league wanted to quietly buy the team and then find sellers after the CBA was negotiated. And now we have this. So if people are interested in buying the Owls, there's got to be money to be made in this league.
Yeah, if you talk to the Wettenhalls, they tell you that they never made any money on the Alouettes. And that's a hard thing for me to believe, because for years they had the highest ticket prices in the league, and the stadium was jam-packed. And I'm sure they were a really hot commodity at one point. They probably had a ton of sponsors. They were probably making money. So this comes at an interesting time, right? Because they can point to the Alouettes and say, look, one of our teams is, you know, doesn't have an owner. We're running this team. We're poor, you know? Yeah, and it's so different from any other time but negotiation time. Everything is amazing in the CFL. You know, we're making money, everything's fine. But as soon as negotiations come around, it's, oh, look at this team, look at that team, look at this team. It's definitely interesting to see.
No, I've never thought about Florida, but you're right. Everyone's always talking about how prosperous – the CFL is the most prosperous it's ever been, and we're the Ticats are finally making money, and this and that, and MLSE is buying the Argos, and oh, but when it's time to divvy up the pie, oh, we don't have very much money, and it's like it can't be both.
No, it can't. We all know which teams aren't as prosperous as others. I mean, it's not – hard to figure it out. So, you know, some teams make money, some teams don't. It's as simple as that.
But if league revenue is in the 200 million range and the players are only getting a fraction, like there's clearly some way in which to divvy up this pie better so that players get a bigger slice of it. 22% of league revenue goes to the players for the most important piece. Like, not to call players commodities, but the most important thing about the league is the players on the field. For them to be reaping not even 20, like a quarter of league revenue, that seems wrong to me.
Yeah, it's definitely not a good look on the league. They just need to step up the game. This is not that the CFL doesn't have problems, you know, in certain areas, but this isn't the league from the 1990s. We are doing a lot better. And, you know, if we're going to get all these international TV deals, and there's going to be more money coming in, right?
Indeed. Okay, let's talk about something that's even maybe not more contentious than the CBA, but it's the possibility that the franchise out in Edmonton might be changing their name. Our boys over at the Piffles Pod broke this story wide open earlier. It was either earlier this week or last week. I don't remember when. That Edmonton is in the process of changing their name to the Empire. And of course, whenever you talk about changing a sports team's name, especially one with the connotations that Edmonton's has, it brings out a whole swath of people. So, Mike, where do you stand on the name change?
It's a tough one. You know, I think that it's hard for me to say, because I'm not offended by the name, but I'm not a native. You know, I'm not – I think eventually the name will change no matter what, because this isn't going to go away. It's just going to keep – you know, people are going to keep complaining. And I don't necessarily think it's a bad idea. If it offends some people, then get rid of it. Listen, do I think it's offensive to the – extent of the Washington Redskins? No, I do not, but I don't have proper perspective on the issue as well. So I'm indifferent to it, but I think eventually it will get changed, because the pressure is not going to go away.
Just change the name. Like, just change the name. It's 2019. We should not be naming our sports teams after groups of people. Whether the name is offensive or not is up to the individual. I have made a somewhat conscious effort over the last year plus to limit, if not completely eradicate, my use of the word Eskimos. You'll hear, if you can go back and listen to all the podcasts we've done over the last little while, you'll probably be able to count on one hand the amount of times that I've used it, including today's show. In my writing for Three Down, whenever I talked about Edmonton, I would find other ways in which to talk about it. In tweets that I talked about Edmonton, I used other ways in which to say the name. I actually sat back and thought about this. It was in the wake of the Cleveland Indians were playing the Toronto Blue Jays in, I believe it was the ALCS, and I think it was 2016. And at the time, someone came out with a lawsuit saying the Indians' name was offensive and they shouldn't be allowed to play in Toronto and yada, yada, yada. And I said, like, why is it always at this time of year when people try to do this stuff because they're going to get the most eyeballs? And then someone, I think it was actually Troy Westwood, the former Bombers kicker, who was like, this is why they do it. And it's like, it actually made me reflect on it and go, okay, taking my own personal feelings out of it, because I'm a 37-year-old Anglo-Canadian of British descent. I'm as white can be. I've never experienced discrimination. I've never experienced being offended by a caricature based on what I look like or anything like that. It just, I am who I am. And so I've never had to feel that way about anything. So I thought about, I literally sat and thought about it and was like, is it really that big a deal to just, even if one person is like supremely offended by this, what's the point in keeping a name that does bring up, like, and this is how I kind of figured it out to myself. If you met an Inuit person and you went to the, and face to face with them or talking to them, would you call them an Eskimo? You probably wouldn't. And if you do, you're probably a dick. So if you wouldn't call someone this word, why are we using it to call our sports teams that, when it's like, the Edmonton Elks were a thing. The Edmonton Empire is a pretty cool sounding name. Like, it's like nothing changes about the team if you change the name. And since this came out, since our friends over at Piffles broke this story, they have taken some slings and arrows about why the name shouldn't be changed. And as far as I'm concerned, none of them hold any water. Like, it's, but it's tradition. Nonsense. If it's offensive,
snowflakes.
Yeah, snowflakes. The word can be offensive to people. There's no reason to keep it around. Just change the name.
I don't think it's just offensive to all Inuit people or all Native people. Like, some people just don't care. Some people think it's it's an honor to have a team named after them. I've seen that before. But if it offends, like you said, offends anyone, then just get rid of it. If they keep, you know, Edmonton Elks, you can still keep the EE logo. Edmonton Empire, you can still keep the Edmonton Eskimo EE logo. So I don't, you know, the Grey Cups are still going to be there. All the traditions still going to be there. Just change the name, and I think eventually, maybe after this season, it will be changed.
I think it's sooner rather than later. They're going to change the name because There's no good reason to keep it. All you're doing is we've seen this for a number of years now too.
For the people that are just, they say, oh, I'm canceling my season tickets if you change it. I've seen it. Just shut up.
You're not.
Like, get over it. Who cares? Like, if the Hamilton Tiger Cats had an offensive name, I wouldn't care if they changed the name. They're still a Hamilton team. They still have all the tradition. Just get over yourselves. Like, really.
Yeah. No one's canceling season tickets if they change the name. Because if that's the case, then you're not really a fan to begin with. If you're that tied to a nickname, like, not like, okay, so the Tiger Cats is Hamilton's nickname, but they're called the Tie Cats. They're called the Tabbies. They're called the Cats. The Argonauts is the Argos nickname, but people call them the Double Blue, or they call them the Argos. We call these teams by multiple names anyway that have nothing to do, like, who cares?
The green name. And gold. The green, you know, in Edmonton, the green and gold, you know, whatever.
We call BC the Leos. They're the Stamps. Yeah. They're like, the idea that there's something so sacrosanct about a team nickname to me is absolutely ludicrous.
I totally agree. Just, change it, because it's not going away. Every year this is going to come up. So just, you know, get your ducks in a row, figure out the new name, and maybe after the season, change it. Because I don't, I wouldn't care if they changed it before the season, but I don't think that's going to happen. So, you know, just know that this is coming.
Yep. I could accept it and move on, or don't accept it and be a whiny baby about it. But either way, they're probably going to be the Edmonton Empire in the not too distant future. So just get used to it. That's what's going to be, and too bad.
Yeah, and if they're going to lose fans, they'll be like that dick that was at the game last year talking about Mazzoli. So bingo. Those fans, you can lose.
You can lose them. Okay, last thing for this week, Mike. I'm going to get on my soapbox a little bit about this, because this thing just – I don't know, man. The league announced last week, or I guess earlier this week, that they were granting two territorial exemption draft picks in the upcoming draft to the two worst teams, in this case being the Argos and the Owls. They will get an extra draft pick at the end of the second round to choose a player that's born within their territorial limits. On the surface, great idea, because what do all teams kind of like to do? They like to have local players. Montreal likes to have guys from Quebec. How many guys from Hamilton, or even if they're not from Hamilton, from McMaster, have we seen that become fan favorites? Saskatchewan obviously is massive for this, where guys who grew up in Saskatchewan that play for the Riders are celebrated as local heroes. Every team deals with this. So I think the territorial exemption draft picks, I think it's a great idea. I think the execution of this is just so moronic. Why just two teams? Why not every team? And why drop this 2 weeks before the draft's going to happen? So now teams have to rearrange their draft. Like, it just seems so rushed and ill thought out that it's like, why do this now? Why not wait and do it next year? Or why not give every, you know what I mean? Like, it just seems like this is the first draft of something that needed two or three revisions before it was ready to be released to the public.
Yeah, I'm going to be totally honest with you. I don't understand it. why Toronto and Montreal? Like,
it's literally, they just picked the two worst teams. They just, it said, so highest waiver priority, I think was the exact quote.
So is it going to be two teams every year?
Every year. It's just going to be whichever two teams have the two worst records in the CFL.
Okay, I guess that kind of makes sense, but why two? Like, why not three? Why not one?
Yeah, why not make it the three teams that don't make the playoffs? Or why not make you know what I mean? Like, if you're trying to help out downtrodden teams, well, wouldn't helping out the three teams that missed out on the playoffs last year be a better idea than just helping two? Like, I know there's a lot of conspiracies around this, like, oh, the Owls are getting new owners, so they want to help them out. The Argos are suffering they want to make the Argos better. Like, not that the Argos winning has really ever made a dent in the Toronto sports landscape, but you know what I mean? Like, this is the conspiracy surrounding it, and it's not going to go away anytime soon if it's just because historically the two worst teams usually come from the East.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they do. Go for it. I don't care. Like, it's not going to make Toronto more of an interesting market because, you know, some guy gets drafted from Sarnia or something. Like, no one's going to give a crap. So, if that's their thinking behind it, it's not going
to
work.
No, but my whole thing with this is, this to me is the latest example of this sort of these giant big ideas that the league under Randy Ambrosi has come up with that kind of, you know, land like a fart in church almost. Like, this whole CFL 2.0 thing has felt really rushed to me from the start. He was out in Halifax, 2 years ago now, almost, talking about we're going to get a 10th team. It feels like he's really big. He talked about 100 million people around the world watching the Grey Cup. Like, I understand dreaming big, thinking big, having a big mentality, but he seems to, like, say and do a lot of things, or things have happened under his watch that are just – they're rushed out. They don't seem well thought out. This is another example of that. The whole Mexican combining draft, just it happened in like a minute. Like, they did a European draft. They're inviting European players. Like, it just feels like we've been talking about how long? A CFL TV deal in Mexico for 3 months now? Like, it feels like he, as the face of the league, says a lot of things and tries to like build up the league. But then what's the substance behind it? It's a lot of big ideas and very, very little substance behind it. And it's just, it's starting to come across as like, I kind of ignore him. Whenever he says anything now, it's like, I'll wait until I see something specific or something concrete before I give any sort of weight to anything that comes out of the league, or especially that comes out of Randy Ambrosi's mouth right now. Like, it feels like we all got so excited about him as commissioner, and he had all these grand ideas, and he was kind of like the anti-Jeffrey Orridge, that we all kind of got on board. But at some point, we have to start going, okay, you've said a lot of stuff. Where's the physical things to back this up?
He said a lot of stuff, and I think these things take time. You know, it's not going to be instant 100 million viewers or instant TV contracts. I know that a lot of people are down on Ambrosi right now. I'm still on the bandwagon. I'm not going to jump to conclusions. I'm not going to say he's a bad commissioner yet. I don't think he's had enough time. I don't think there's anything wrong with dreaming big. Yes, we haven't seen any results yet, but it's a long-term plan. And I'm just going to hold judgment right now. It's hard for me to – there's so much negativity. Every time something – he says something, it's like, oh, you're an idiot. Oh, the leagues are stupid. You know, it's – I don't want to be negative towards – I'm a fan. I'm not a media guy who's like, everything he says I'm going to shit on, you know. I will see how this goes. And if you know, they get – 50 million viewers, which is still kind of a stretch. I think it's good to dream big. You know, this guy believes in this league, and we've never really had anyone that stands up for the league. It's always like these timid, oh, we're just the little tiny CFL. We can't do anything big. I like his big thinking.
I got no problem with big thinking, and I got no problem with wanting to be bigger than you are. My problem is all he is big thinking. We haven't seen anything come of this. We haven't seen a TV deal with Mexico. We haven't seen, okay, you want 100 million people to watch the Grey Cup. How are you going to accomplish? Like, it's a lot of, let's say something, and then what has happened to back it up? Now, he's been in charge now for almost 2 years, and since he's been in charge, almost since the day he got the job, we've been talking about an expansion team in Halifax. Now we're talking about expanding internationally. And yes, I understand what you're saying, that all these things take time. But if I came to you and I said, Mike, I'm going to give you $1 million. And then I came to you 2 months later and said, I'm also going to give you a brand new car. And then I came to you 3 months later and said, I'm also going to give you a giant house. Now, I've said all those things to you, but I have yet to deliver on any of them. At what point do you start to go, okay, maybe he's full of shit, or maybe he should really stop promising me things if he's not going to deliver? Like, shouldn't you promise one thing and then work on that, and then deliver the end game of that before you then start saying, I want to do this, and I want to do that, and I want, like, it feels like he's almost trying to do everything at once, and then nothing ever comes of it.
Yeah, that's just, you know, I think that you're going to just have to wait and see what this, like, the TV contract's in the works, I guess. That's what they've been saying. I don't think they'd say that if it wasn't. You know, maybe they're hammering out the numbers. I don't know how much money they're going to get from it. I just like the way he thinks. I think that we can be a bigger league. We can make more revenues in different areas. And I don't necessarily think that expanding internationally is a bad thing. And with the Halifax thing, I mean, you can't really lay that on him. He's done everything he could. It's on the owners of that team and the people of Halifax, not the people, but the government of Halifax, if they want it, if the people of Halifax really want it, you know, there's going to have to be money put into the stadium, blah, blah, blah. So you can't really lay it on him, in my opinion. I mean, we're close as we've ever been to getting a team in Atlantic Canada. And that's something to be said. I mean, we're so close. So I think that's going to happen. I don't know about these international TV contracts. I have no idea about those, but I agree with you that he's saying a lot of big things, and maybe those things aren't attainable, but we're just going to have to wait and see. I think these things will take time to do.
But then, that is fine. Stop making grand proclamations about stuff.
I don't think he made any promises per se. He said, you know, I would like, I'm not sure the exact wording with the 100 million, but we could see, you know, it's a possibility. He never promised that we're going to get 100 million people watching the Grey Cup. He never promised that we're going to get $20 million TV contract from Europe and Mexico and this. It's just he wants that. You know, he wants to expand the revenue.
Let's be bigger and stronger, more exciting, more entertaining. We can have the 12 million fans that watch us in Canada on Grey Cup combined with another 20 million around the world, and 20 million on 6 billion is not a bad bet. Now we have 32 to 35 million people watching Grey Cup, and why would we think that our game isn't worthy of a 35 million or 40 or 50 million fans around the world watching a game that's fun and fast like ours is, Ambrosi said. 10 yeah. years from now, we will have 10 teams that will play nationally. 10 years from now. By that time, we will have – so within 10 years, this is what he said. By that time, we will have somewhere between 50 and 70 million people around the world watching Grey Cup and maybe 100 million by the time we're done. We don't have one internet – we won't have one international broadcast deal. We'll have 10. So within 10 years, we will have 10 CFL teams and we will have between 50 and 70 million people around the world watching the Grey Cup. Those are his exact words.
Okay, well, 10 years from now, Josh, we'll have to sit down.
He won't be commissioner in 10 years.
Oh, you never know. Well, it does. Yeah, but, you know, it's still his plans. No matter if he's the commissioner or not, we can still sit down 10 years from now and see what the numbers actually are. I'm betting on Ambrosi, okay?
Look.
I'm betting on him, all right? All you naysayers can naysay all you want. I'm still on the Ambrosi boat.
I guess I've taken my mantle back as the negative Nelly of the show, because for a while there you being anti Halifax getting a team, not anti as in you didn't want it, but you don't believe that it's going to happen. And I was always so for it. And now you're like, no, we're going to do this. And I'm just like, this ain't happening, man.
Yeah, it switches back and forth. But I will say this about the Halifax thing. I do like the new plan they laid out.
Yeah, I was going to have us talk about that, but I felt like it would just be me and you going, I kind of like the new stadium idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's basically it. That's what I'll say is it's a better idea than just – and this is well established. You know, everyone knows this. It's a better idea than just going to the government and saying, give me $150, $175 million, you know?
I think it's a lot easier to get a stadium built that you say – we're going to spend X amount of dollars of public money to build this thing to make it a community stadium, and then we'll spend the rest to make it into a CFL-ready stadium. I don't know. That feels like a lot more of an easier pill to swallow for regional, municipal, and provincial governments than, yeah, like you said, give us $200 million.
Yeah, they're going to put the – it's going to be year-round apparently, and there'll be a lot of community sports in there. So hopefully – this is the first step towards getting an actual stadium out there and a 10th team, because that's what we all want.
It is what we all want. And as negative as I am about all this stuff, I hope all this thing comes to fruition. I hope he doubles league revenue. I hope 100 million people are watching a Grey Cup in a decade. I hope there's 10 teams in this league. I hope they – like everything he's saying, I want to happen. I'm just waiting for something to actually happen before I really start getting excited about all the additional things he thinks – or wants to happen. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm all totally on board with everything he wants to do, but until the 10th team, that seems to be the big one. If once that's officially announced, we have stadium funding, we have a site, this is when the team's going to kick off. Okay. Like now I'm okay. He's delivered on something. Now let's see if he can deliver on the other thing. Like I want these things to happen. I'm just waiting for something to actually happen so I can have evidence to say like, well, he says this is going to happen, but he did this and this worked. So I trust him. You know what I mean? Right now it's a lot of like, let's do this and let's do that. And then it's like, okay, well, how are we going to do it? I don't know. We're just going to do it. Mm. I just want to see something concrete, something that he wants to do that actually happens, that works. And we're all like going, what a great thing. And obviously not everyone's going to do that. There's always going to be people who poo-poo something. In a lot of cases, that will end up being me. But at the same time, just give me one thing that he started and finished that's made this league better, and I'm on board with giving him all the leeway he needs to get everything else done. But until then, I'm going to remain skeptical, just like you are about a franchise in Halifax.
That's fair enough, and I won't blame you for that. But I think they could – just one thing. I think they could, you know – the number of people viewing the Grey Cup could go up tremendously, especially with if they get a deal on the internet, you know, YouTube or whatever, like whatever platform that is a big step in the right direction, because everyone in the world basically has the internet and they can tune in to Grey Cup. And I don't know how they collect those numbers of viewers on the internet, but that could be a big step in the right direction towards getting more people viewing the Grey Cup.
Well, turn those viewers into dollars and give some of those dollars to our players, and we'll all be happy come the summer as we're watching CFL football. Sounds good to me.
Yes, sounds good to me as well.
All right, that was Podski Wee Wee for this week. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.